You are listening to the podcast of Grace Bible Church Ann Arbor. We are the rescued people of God joining His Great Restoration Project. More information, including sermons in this series, can be found at graceat2.org. Thanks so much for tuning in.
I know that I've mentioned his profound influence before, but there is a doctor that you may have seen on TV doing a very important work that at some point in our lives, all of us may need. You may have seen him wearing his nice sweater with his perfectly combed hair and his neatly trimmed mustache. His name is Dr. Rick, and his area of expertise is helping people recognize and recover from a most malicious malady, the malady of becoming our parents. Now, every time I see these commercials, I laugh. I've seen them 100 times, and I always laugh when he starts throwing pillows off of the couch, or when he's trying to help people pronounce the word quinoa, or when he tells the two guys, don't mention it, don't say anything, we all see it, and they can't help themselves. He has blue hair, and they just talk. And it's funny because we're all getting older, we're all changing, we're all growing, but the question is, are we growing up? That's the question we raised last week, is whether or not, if you're 8 or 18 or 88, are you still maturing, still learning, and still growing? Today is part 2 of us thinking through and addressing that question. The first 17 chapters of the book of Exodus have been very dramatic in the rescue that was happening of God's people. And then chapter 18 happens and is kind of this transition to the rest of the book, which is about, well, daily relationship with God. And so what we looked at last week was how the people, and Moses specifically, were growing up. God had saved his people, and then he was going to save through his people. He had blessed his people, and then he was going to bless through his people. And Moses was growing up specifically in the first part of chapter 18 in his witness. We talked about that with Moses' witness last week, but I happened upon an article of somebody else pretty famous who's growing up in their faith and their witness as well. Maybe you've heard of him before. His name is Justin Bieber. Now, my guess is almost all of us have heard of him because he's one of the most famous people in the world. In fact, the article suggested that maybe he had lived a life unlike any other. Like, he's been famous for so long to such a degree that almost nobody else can relate to that level of fame. But it was the GQ magazine cover story, and it was all about how his life has radically changed since he's gotten married and fallen deeply in love with Jesus. And as I read through it, they also interviewed Chance the Rapper, who also loves Jesus. It was amazing to just hear his responses to the questions, to see him welling up with emotion as he's trying to talk about his wife and his faith. Even the interviewer was deeply moved by how much interest Bieber was taking in the interviewer. And in fact, at the end of the interview, Justin Bieber was trying to like encourage the interviewer and talking about, hey man, you've probably been through some hard things yourself, we all have, but this is a gift, this moment we have, and what you're doing, this work, this is awesome. And the interviewer was genuinely moved by his sincere faith. When I read that, I just thought, what a beautiful thing to see somebody growing up in the faith, whether it's Justin Bieber, or Kanye West, or Chance the Rapper, or Chris Pratt, or these famous people, we ought to be praying that they continue to grow up in the faith and share their story of Christ. Well, that was last week, talking about growing up in our witness. This week, we're going to talk about growing up in wisdom, growing up in wisdom. There was a problem that Moses and the people were going to face, or did face, in the second part of chapter 18 that would require great wisdom on the people's part, but also on Moses' part for them to move forward. So for us to talk this through, I'm going to break it up into 3 parts. The problem, the practices, and then the power to keep growing. So here's the first part. This is the problem. This is Exodus 18, starting in verse 13. The next day, Moses sat down to judge the people, and the people stood around Moses from morning till evening. When Moses' father-in-law saw all that he was doing for the people, he said, "What is this that you're doing for the people? Why do you sit alone and all the people stand around you from morning till evening?" And Moses said to his father-in-law, because the people come to me to inquire of God. When they have a dispute, they come to me, and I decide between one person and another, and I make them know the statutes of God and his law. So what was the problem? Well, there was a people problem. All of the people wanted to talk to Moses. If you would have looked at the long line that had backed up, that was ready to speak to him, if you would have asked them, why are you standing in this line? They probably would have said, well, Moses seems to be the one most connected to God. He's our leader. He's very wise. We need to have an audience with him so that we can figure out what to do in these different situations. We'll bring our issues to him, and then he'll speak back to us this great answer. I mean, what they were doing is not, well, different than what all of us do. All of us tend to gravitate towards the most famous, impressive, connected person in the room. Go ahead, name drop, if you're watching this with somebody. Who's the most famous person with whom you've ever had like a real conversation? Who is it? Just elbow them and let them know. I mean, there's something about people like that we gravitate towards. We feel like they have more gifts, that they matter more. Maybe we feel if they're kind of a spiritual person that they're more connected to God. But these people were waiting in line to talk to Moses. And if you would say, well, what do you need? They would say, well, I need to talk to Moses. But what did they actually need? Well, they actually needed wisdom. They needed to speak to God, well, themselves. They needed to pursue the right answers to their issues. They needed to probably talk to someone else. We find out all through these texts that they had elders that were available to them, the older people in their clans, in their families, respected men among the community that they could have talked to seek out wisdom. But instead, they thought they needed to go to Moses, but they really needed to grow up in this wisdom. But the problem wasn't only a people problem. There was also a leader problem. Moses also had a problem, because as these people lined up all day long asking their questions, not only did they think that they needed him, Moses thought that they needed him. He was buying into these expectations that were on his shoulder, that he was the guy in charge. He was their leader, so he would have to just answer each one of them, like person after person, and listen to all of their complaints and struggles and prayer requests and whatever it was. He also had a problem, because he thought, I need to be the guy. Before COVID and setting up appointments, do you remember what it was like to go to the Secretary of State office? I mean, it almost didn't matter how early you got there. There would be a line waiting out in front, and then you get in the line, and then you go in, and then you take one of those little paper numbers, and you look at it, and it was way higher than you thought it should be, and you'd look up at the little board, and sure enough, it was going to take you forever, and you would wait, and you would wait, and you would wait. If you were to look around the Secretary of State office, besides the 16-year-old getting their license picture who's smiling, was anybody else in that room happy? I mean, the person behind the counter is frustrated. The people who are waiting their turn and watching, they're all, everybody was frustrated. Here's Moses. He has a line of hundreds, maybe thousands. He's the lone clerk behind the desk. And nobody is actually happy with this system. And yet he feels the weight of it all on his shoulders. We find out through the text that he was actually starting to burn out. In other passages, he's like, I don't want to lead these people anymore. He was getting fried. He was over it. He was over them. He was over trying to be the go-between. He was just sort of exhausted. Does that describe any of you in these past few months, maybe a year? Are any of you feeling a little bit fried? Medical people, I'm looking at you. Teachers, students, business owners, employees, parents, are any of you just feeling the weight of other people's expectations on you? Maybe even your own expectations for yourself, and that it's constant and it's heavy. And yes, we're in this difficult and different season, and there's all of these needs, very real needs, but doesn't it kind of feel like at times it's just crushing, and that burnout might just be right around the corner? I mean, what you're doing is important. I'm not trying to suggest that it's not important, but what you're doing might actually be a little bit off in some ways. There might be some problems with the way you're trying to manage all of the expectations that are on you. Look at this loving but very direct confrontation by Jethro to to Moses in verse 17. Moses' father-in-law said to him, "What you are doing is not good. You and the people with you will certainly wear yourselves out, for the thing is too heavy for you. You are not able to do it alone. Now, obey my voice. I will give you advice, and God be with you. You shall represent the people before God and bring their cases to God. And you shall warn them about the statutes and the laws and make them know the way in which they must walk and what they must do. Moreover, look for able men from all the people, men who fear God, who are trustworthy and hate a bribe, and place such men over the people as chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. And let them judge the people at all times. Every great matter they shall bring to you, but any small matter they shall decide themselves. So it will be easier for you, and they will bear the burden with you. If you do this, God will direct you. You will be able to endure, and all this people also will go to their place in peace." So Moses listened to the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he had said. Moses chose able men out of all of Israel and made them heads over the people, chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. And they judged the people at all times. Any hard case they brought to Moses, but any small matter they decided themselves. Then Moses let his father-in-law depart, and he went away to his own country. Here we see a loving and direct correction that his father-in-law gave to Moses. Jethro says, "What you are doing is not right." Maybe for some of you, if you're feeling fried, burned out, just overwhelmed, maybe what you are doing is not exactly right. You're exhausted, you're weighed down, you are feeling fried, the people around you are feeling fried, and you have this sort of guilt constantly. Well, fortunately, Jethro doesn't just say what you're doing is not right and then leave. The sermon doesn't end right here. He actually gave very practical suggestions for what Moses ought to do, and we find out that Moses did in fact listen. So that was the problem. Here are the practices. Now, these practices are often said specifically for leaders. A lot of people focus on this for leaders, but the wisdom practices here are for anyone. If you're leading a business or a church or a team, or if you're not leading anyone, there's still a ton of wisdom to be gained from what we see that Moses does. So here are five practices that we see Moses do. The first is this: practicing wisdom means not neglecting your family. You see, the first thing we find out is that Jethro brought Moses' family back. Now, a lot of people have kind of talked about and argued about, like, well, what was Moses' relationship like with his family? And was Jethro bringing back the family because Jethro wanted to? Did Moses send for them? I mean, there are even rabbis who have said that maybe Zipporah and Moses had like marital problems, and they speculate all kinds of things. We can't know what their relationship was really like, but what we do know is that his family being there was now part of what he needed to be handling and doing. It was his first calling was to his family. We are all called to serve our families. In a letter to a young pastor, the Apostle Paul gave instructions about family members, and he said this: "If anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." I mean, it is absolutely critical that in our service to God or our jobs or whatever it is, that we do not neglect our families. In fact, God has called us to those people first. They are the ones that we're supposed to be taking care, making sure that we're taking care of and looking out for. And this, I know, is like a no-brainer for many of us. But so often people, in their quest to achieve academic success or athletic success or climb whatever sort of ladder is in their world, they end up leaving their families behind so that they can pursue their potential. Always choose your calling over your potential. I was talking to a GBCer who's a husband, father, engineer, and he's also in seminary right now. And he said, "My whole life, as I've been in school, you know, in undergrad and high school and all that," he said, "I was always the kid trying to get straight A's and do everything perfectly and be the best and turn everything in on time or early." And he said, "For the first time in my life, because of my situation where I have a job and I have this family and these little kids," he said, "I've actually just not turned in some assignments. I have never not turned in an assignment before, but," he said, "I'm actually in seminary to learn. not just get a grade. And so, because that's my goal, but I know that my family, it comes first. He said, there's been things I just haven't turned in. And I thought, yes, like in his case, that is the wise thing for him to do, to make sure that his family comes first. Now, time out, high schooler who's thinking, oh, Pastor Ty said, I don't turn in any assignments because of my family. Stop it. I'm not talking to you right now. But it is important for all of us to put our families first. The tricky thing about this is that not only do we tend to leave them behind to chase, but many times the thing that we're chasing, we convince ourselves that we're chasing it for our families. Oh, I'm working all these hours for my family. I'm giving up so much of my life for this academic pursuit. It's for my family. I got to make all this money. It's for my family. And pretty soon we're almost like become convoluted in our thinking and we can't realize that we're actually missing the boat. Those hours, that money, that achievement, that service, it may actually be about us. So Moses, he had his family brought in. He was going to have to pay attention to this family. If you are in some sort of crazy, busy zone and the season of your life is just such that you're like, it's spiraling out of control. You're feeling like you're going to burn out. You're feeling a little bit fried. Then just go ahead and ask your spouse, hey, are there some ways you think that I could scale back a little? Or I should scale back? Ask your mentor. How did you keep balanced when you were in my season of life? Ask a good friend. Hey, do you think I'm like convincing myself that this is for my family when really this is just about me? Ask those people that are around you. I mentioned one of my mentors last week. His name is Larry Osborne. He's a pastor out in California, and he's in his 60s, and his kids are grown, and he's been leading the same church for decades. And so he's one of those guys that I just look up to, and I think, okay, that's what I would love to be able to do. And he said, you know, it's never God's will to ignore your family. He said, if you want to maximize everything within you, if you want to maximize your gifts and maximize your education and maximize your bank account and maximize your influence and your position and your work accomplishments and your potential, if you want to maximize all those things, he said, stay single. Because there's some beautiful things about being single, and you have the ability to be driven in a way that you can't as soon as you bring family into the mix. If you have family, you will have a divided mind. So don't choose, if you have a family, potential over your calling. What you could do, don't choose that over what you should do. Start at home first. Wisdom starts at home. That's number one. Number two, practicing wisdom means being teachable. Being teachable. There were definitely reasons when Jethro spoke to Moses why Moses may have been like, psh, whatever. Like, first off, Jethro had been a Christian or a Yahweh follower for like maybe a day. I mean, we don't really know the timestamp here, but he didn't know the same God the same way that Moses did. Jethro had never led thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people like Moses was. Jethro wasn't talking to God directly like Moses was. I mean, it would have been so easy for Moses to be like, nah, like, okay, that's a nice idea, but you don't understand how much they actually need me. In fact, some of you, even when I was just pushing that button about your family, you're thinking, oh, okay, whatever, Ty, but you don't actually know what my real situation is. Wisdom is teachable. It is humble. It is looking to learn lessons from maybe people that you wouldn't expect would give you those lessons. It's listening to your kids or your neighbor or your student or whoever, and it's hearing even from different sources what God might be telling you and where he might be nudging you. I read about General Mills, the food processing plant or company, which is known for brands like Häagen-Dazs and Pillsbury and all that. And they were trying to figure out, okay, if we're making some Pillsbury stuff and we want to change over the production so that we could then start making something else, like a different product in the same building, like how long does it take to change over from one product to another? And as they were trying to figure this out, they could not get under 2.5 hours for the changeover from one product to the other, with just switching out the machines and all that kind of stuff. And so somebody in General Mills had this crazy idea where they said, let's just go outside of food production and see if we can learn how to do this better in a completely different realm. And so one of the things you may not know about General Mills, unless you're a big NASCAR fan, is that they sponsor a NASCAR race car. And so they went to watch pit crews. Now, can you imagine a bunch of engineers who work for General Mills, who have their white collars and their degrees, going down to a pit crew and watching these guys? And they may have easily thought, like, who are these guys to teach us, right? Like, they don't know anything about food production or engineering or whatever. But instead, they went with a humble, teachable spirit, and they watched how the pit crews operated. And as they took those principles back and had meetings and figured out how to do things, they changed the way they did things so that they could change over their plants in a mere 12 minutes, from 2.5 hours down to 12 minutes, because they were willing to learn from someone else. They were teachable. They ended up saving close to $1 billion just by making that small change. To practice wisdom, we must be teachable. Even if you're 80, who are you learning from this week? What are you listening to? What are you reading so that you can keep growing? Third, practicing wisdom means prioritizing character over gifting. Jethro's advice was, find good guys that you can trust. He didn't say, hey, find the most handsome guys, the richest guys. No. Find good quality, trustworthy men who you can set up to help these people make these decisions. Wisdom always puts character above gifting. If you hire an extremely gifted employee who also is a bit untoward in his approach to money, you're gonna have problems. If you date an incredibly attractive person who has, you know, this tremendous intellect, and yet they're actually a really, like, the big liar or something, I mean, you're going to get hurt. Like, whenever we try to lift up gifting as the thing, it always causes problems. Always prioritize character first. It matters the most. Think about children, okay? Let's just taste this rabbit for a minute. Some of us that are listening have children. Some of us are children. Some of us are aunts or uncles or grandparents, or maybe we just have some friends and we just love their kids. What do we really want out of those kids when they're adults, right? Like, I mean, they have a certain degree of potential in terms of how musical they can be, or athletic, or how great at math, or whatever. There's a certain degree of potential built into them by God, and, you know, Lord willing, they'll meet that potential. But do we really want extremely gifted kids, or do we want really high character kids? And you might say, well, I want both. Okay, that's great. But only one of those things can we really kind of focus on. What I mean is, you could try to do both, but those are going to come into conflict with each other at some point. So if you can choose to focus and communicate the value of Christ-like character over everything else. Listen, my sons, they're gifted. I think they're funny, they're athletic, they're great. I love them. But if I had to pick scholarship or spiritual maturity, it's a no-brainer for me. It's spiritual maturity. If I had to pick that they're awesome soccer players when they're 24, or that they love Jesus and they're, like, trying to care for and grow up in a family, that's what I'm going to choose every single time, because I care about them being godly men, not gifted kids or gifted adults. And my guess is many of you who are listening are thinking, well, yeah, that's what I want for my nieces and my nephews. That's what I want for my children. That's what a lot of us want. But despite the fact that we say that character matters more than gifting, sometimes I think we give kids mixed messages. So check this out. If one of my children, if I wake him up in the morning and it's time for school and he goes, Dad, I don't want to go to school. And I say to him, why, are you sick or something? And he goes, no, I'm just tired and we're not going to do anything important today anyway. I would say, oh, okay, get ready for school. We're going to school. Like, there's not really a choice here, right? Or if there's a soccer match and he's like, I don't want to go to the soccer match. I'm like, nobody's making you play soccer. Like, I didn't make you sign up for this team, but you're committed to the team and they need you and you'll get better by playing. So get your gear on and we're going to head to the game. Now, when I say that about school, oh, we got to do this, or say it about soccer, what am I saying, really? What I'm saying is academics are important. Perseverance is important. Being committed to a team and sticking it out is important. You know, athletics are important, right? That's what I'm holding up as being important, and that's great to say that. But what happens when my kid says, Dad, I don't really want to go to church. Like, I don't know, I'm just kind of tired. Do we have to go to small group? I mean, I have a soccer game instead of church, so can't we just go to the soccer thing instead of go to church? And if I say, well, hey, I'm tired too, Oh, yeah. I mean, you are committed to that. I mean, we paid for the soccer game, so, I mean, we should probably go. And maybe we'll catch church later. I mean, out of one side of my mouth, I might say, oh, Christ-like character is the most important. But what am I saying in that moment? Well, in that moment, I'm saying, as long as it's school, you better go. As long as it's a soccer match, you better stay committed. Oh, it's just church. It's just developing your Christ-like character. So sometimes, and I know these are nuanced and difficult conversations, especially as the kids get older and they might push back on some of these things, but we need to be careful about what we're really lifting up as truly important. You talk to your friends, you talk to the kids, and you talk to, hey, how's it going? What do we ask the kids about? What do we celebrate? Do we celebrate that they got A's? Do we celebrate that they scored a goal? Or do we celebrate that they're becoming more compassionate and generous and thoughtful? What are we telling our kids really matters? Wisdom says character comes first. Whether you're hiring someone, dating someone, raising a kid, or encouraging somebody who's raising a kid, character comes first. All right. Practicing wisdom means, fourth, sharing the load. Jethro says, if you get these people together, they will share the load with you. They'll be able to handle some of these smaller things. Yes, they'll still bring you the big issues, but they'll be alongside of you on some of these smaller things. See, up until this point, God had taught Moses and the people, look, I can take care of your food. I can take care of your water. I can take out your enemies. But here, God was going to teach them that he could also take care of his people. That ultimately, how these people were led was God's work to do. And for some of us, that's actually the hardest lesson to learn. That God is ultimately the one who's going to care for our patients, our students, our children. That it's ultimately in God's hands. And so Jethro gave Moses his advice. Hey, it doesn't all depend on you. God can use other people. Let's get a bunch of people. Let's separate them into groups. You are not the only one that God can use. You are not indispensable. Other people have gifts too. So find some good guys and let's go. You can trust them with this. Think about how much humility and trust in God this requires. Because we all like being the guy. Or the gal. We all like when people need us, when we have to be the decision maker, when people come to us and go, hey, only you can help me in this. We all like that, and it feeds into our egos to believe that we are needed. And it takes tremendous humility and trust in God to entrust other people with these important tasks that have been given to us. When we care about something, it can be difficult to share the load, but wisdom shares the burden with others that they can trust. If you want something done right, do it yourself, unless that something is significant. If you want something significant done right, then you better bring along others to help you with it. When I worked in carpentry, I had two very different bosses. The first boss would say, Ty, here's what I want you to do, and he'd sort of explain it to me, and then he'd hand me a hammer or tape measure or saw or whatever. And then I'd start to go to work, and he would just back up about two steps, and he'd look over my shoulder right at me, and he'd go, hey, just hand it to me. And I mean, I probably didn't swing the hammer, do the saw, tape measure, whatever, for like 40 seconds before he had jumped back in and was doing all the real work, and then I just sort of stood there, and then he paid me for it. Now, in some ways, that was great, right? It was like the easiest job ever. But also, I felt like I'm not really learning anything, and I'm not actually helping this guy. And to be fair, I wasn't that great at the job, so it made sense that he jumped in. But about a year later, I got another carpentry boss. And he was very different because he would do the same thing. All right, Ty, here's what you need to do, whatever. And then he would hand me the tools. But instead of standing back and watching and then taking it back, he would leave. Probably because he didn't want to see how badly I mangled whatever the job was at first. But he also knew that I was going to have to learn how to do this. And there might be some mistakes, but I was going to work my way through it. And if I would ever be an asset to him at the job, then he'd have to trust me to carry that load with him. Our goal as leaders, as parents, as pastors, as doctors, nurses, whoever we are, wherever we're working, ought to be to help raise up others to share in these significant tasks with us. Now, some of you might be thinking, but Ty, you don't know how important I am to this school, to this church, to this hospital, you don't realize that I am such a significant, critical piece of this puzzle. And you might be right. I have no idea how important your specific role is in your specific organization. You might be right. But do you know who else is probably more important than you?
What, Jesus?
Yeah, exactly, Jesus. Jesus is way more important than any of us. Have you ever noticed how Jesus ran his ministry on earth? Well, sure, he was at the forefront of a lot of the miracles and the teaching and all this, but then he raised up these other disciples, these total knuckleheads, nowhere near as amazing as Jesus in any way, and he empowered them to carry on his work. So if Jesus can do it, then maybe we ought to try to do it as well. Maybe it is, in fact, the wise thing to share the load with others around us. Fifth, practicing wisdom means creating boundaries. Jethro tells him, if you do this, things will be better for everyone. And he didn't use this word, but I would add eventually. Because here's my guess. As soon as Moses said, all right, here's how we're going to divide this up, and you're going to run that, and blah, blah, blah. And now as soon as people went, but wait a second, I still want to talk to Moses. And he's like, nope, you got to talk to that guy first, and you have to go through these layers of bureaucracy or whatever. Like, you have to talk to your people. My guess is they weren't very happy about it. I mean, they probably were like, but wait a second, I would rather talk to Moses. I'd rather, because he seems to go right to God. I don't want to talk to this other guy. Moses had to set this up, and then he had to stick with it. People had incredible expectations of him, but he simply could not deal with it all. And it wasn't ultimately best for them. So he had to draw these boundaries and then live by them. And you do too. There might be tremendous expectations on your shoulders, and there may even be people who are like, but I need you specifically. Your boss might say, I really need you. You're the only one I can trust. Your boyfriend might say, oh, my life will fall apart without you. Right? That family, oh, if you are the one who holds it all together. And we have people like that in our lives. They're like, no, I need you. But we need to create wise boundaries, recognizing that there's other people that can help in these situations. And yes, sometimes people, when you don't meet their expectations because of these boundaries, they will accuse you of not doing the right thing. John Piper introduced me to this phrase, and he has this quote about emotional blackmail, which I thought was really interesting. He said, emotional blackmail happens when a person equates his or her emotional pain with another person's failure to love. They aren't the same. A person may love well, and the beloved still may feel hurt, and use that hurt to blackmail the lover into admitting guilt that he or she does not have. Emotional blackmail says, if I hurt you, you're guilty. There's no defense. The hurt person has become God. His emotion has become judge and jury. Truth doesn't matter. All that matters is the sovereign suffering of the aggrieved. It is above question. This emotional device is a great evil. I have seen it often in my 3 decades of ministry, and I'm eager to defend people who are being wrongly indicted by it. Some of us have experienced this. We have created good boundaries with our in-laws or with our employees or employers or our advisors or whatever. And then when those people bumped up against our boundaries, they got mad at us and said, well, you're not doing this right, and you don't really care about me. And they try to blackmail us, when in reality, we are trying to be wise and recognize that ultimately they don't need us. They need God. They need wisdom. So set up good boundaries. Talk with your trusted friend. Talk with your spouse. Talk with whoever it is in your life that can help you create some good boundaries, and then keep it. There were people and leader problems that they were facing. And there were some practices that Moses employed after learning from Jethro how to be wise. If you're feeling a little bit fried, if you're struggling with the weight of expectations on your shoulders, or maybe even your own expectations on your shoulders, we ought to keep seeking to be wise and employ these practices. But one of the challenges of me giving really practical things like this or talking about how to be wise is for some of us, it just becomes more things that we're failing, more things to do. There are 2 ways we can walk in this world. One is ever present in our culture, and it says, If you want to be a good student, a good teacher, a good nurse, a good doctor, a good parent, if you want to be a good socially conscious person or a good friend or even a good Christian, then you better do work now. You better do it. You better act better. You better be right. All of these principles you just gave, you better listen to your pastor or else you're not a good Christian. There is one way in culture that screams, do it. Do more, do better. That's the way of the world. And if we walk in that way, what we will find, instead of this being life-giving, this will be life-draining. These practices will be just more things where we're failing and struggling and not doing and we're not good leaders. And it'll suck life out of us. But there is another way. What Moses needed to understand is what we need to understand. These are not simply ways to earn God's favor or accomplish God's work, because the sacrifice and grace of Christ has accomplished everything. See, our world screams, do more, do good, do better. Jesus from the cross said, it's finished. In essence, he said, done. The world, do, do, do. Jesus goes, no, I've already done it. So instead of you feeling more guilt and more weight and more burnout, even in your Christian faith, no. Recognize that the real work has been accomplished by Jesus. It is Jesus who says something very different than what the world says. In Matthew 11, he says this, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. If you are somebody who is just exploring faith, then if you were to take these five wisdom principles and employ them in your life, I think some things will go better for you. You have some better boundaries. I think there's some successful sort of strategy principles here that you could use that would make things better. However, you may find that over time you will lack the power, the motivation, sort of the fuel to keep this up, because these just become more things to do. But if you begin to recognize that Christ has actually accomplished the work, that the greatest thing that can happen in our world is going to happen through God, not through us, then instead of us having to do a bunch more stuff, we get invited into what Jesus is already doing. One of our pastors, his name's Alex, he has a son named Christian who's at this incredibly cute age. He's almost 3 years old. And Christian loves to help his daddy. At Christmas time, Alex sent me this picture of Christian looking very serious with his footy pajamas and his slightly askew hard hat, his Velcro tool belt filled with assorted tools in it, and of course, work goggles. And Christian is at that age where he just loves to watch his dad work. And so when Alex is replacing his deck, Christian is nearby, right? He's underfoot. He wants to be in on the action. And a lot of that is because of his age and because he's a kid who just knows how much his daddy loves him, and also because of how much he wants to be like his dad. And so when Alex is working on something, Christian straps on the tools, puts on the helmet, whatever, he wants to go to work too. And it's not exhausting for him, it's a joy for Christian, because it's an opportunity to be near dad and to be more like dad. And I don't know if Christian thinks he's accomplishing anything, but he's not even three. He's not really accomplishing much. He knows at some level, we all know certainly, that it's going to be his daddy who accomplishes the work, but he gets to be part of it. And so he works a little, and then he snacks a little, and then he works a little, and he plays a little, and he works a little, he might nap a little, and he works a little. But for him, it is not draining and exhaustion. It is joy. It's his relationship to his daddy that draws him into the work and gives him power to keep growing up and working alongside of him. That drive that many of us have to keep everyone happy and meet everyone's needs and achieve some sort of success in our world and maybe in our own minds, that is going to burn us out and exhaust us. It is only through letting Christ lead us and teach us and grow us up in wisdom that we can have the power to be part of what he is doing in this world. Let's pray. Father, we thank you. We thank you because in these very real problems we see our own, that we have expectations of ourselves and others that maybe aren't realistic. God, I would ask that as we kind of process these practices for ourselves and our careers and our families, that you would raise up a couple of these for us that we really need to work on. But in the end, God, may it all flow out of a relationship with you because of what Jesus has accomplished in his death and resurrection, that we are like little kids under our daddy's feet, watching you do the real work. God, for my people who are feeling fried and burned out and just exhausted, give them just a dose of your spirit and a tremendous amount of wisdom to sort through if there's something they might not be doing exactly right, so that they can get in step with your spirit. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.